Good afternoon, good evening. It's Thursday, October 20th. This is the Kill Radio News. Iraq body count for today. From IraqBodyCount.net, 26,661 civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. That's the minimum. The maximum, 30,018.
Hail to the scumbag, the motherfucking president. Fucking piece of shit! Scumbag asshole, fucking retard! Scumbag, scumbag, you fucking piece of shit! Little fucking piece of shit! Fuck you, you little fucking eat shit scumbag! Eat my shit, fuckwad! Fuckface! Fuck you, you fuck! You fucking little scumbag! You suck ass! You fucking scumbag! You little fucking scumbag! You're a condom! You're a fucking condom! You're full of scum! You're a fucking bag full of fucking scum! You walk around full of the cum that you lick off on the street! You eat shit! You suck shit! You're a fucking piece of shit scumbag! I hate your fucking guts and I want you to die, and it's not even like I think you're gonna win again. It's not like I have to fucking watch you on the television, cause I don't fucking watch television when you're on the television. It's just that you're a fucking piece of shit fuck, shit fuck. It's just that I fucking hate you, you fucking piece of shit. It's just that you're a fucking piece of shit fucking cokehead, pretzel choking drunky coma. Fuck you, you piece of shit scumbag, motherfucker, asshole, scumbag, scumbag, piece of shit, little fucking asshole, retard, hard-on, prick, fuck, scumbag, shit-face, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck the Congress for sucking your dick, and fuck everybody who puts up with it, including me, fuck me for not killing you, fuck everybody who's gotten within 15 fucking feet of you and hasn't fucking tried, but fuck murder, fuck rotting in jail, fuck you, and fuck you, and fuck you, don't even deserve to be executed, just die a slow, fucking, painful, fucking death, you illiterate shit scumbag, scumbag, motherfucking shit-eating scumbag, scumbag, you fucking, you fuck, fuck, fuck you. Fucking piece of shit. Fucking scumbag. Piece of shit. Motherfucking scumbag, 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 piece of shit. Fuck, 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 fuck.
Missile on the president. If you really listen to that song, it's pretty funny because he says that's not like I think you're gonna win next time. So obviously that song was written before he won next time. I'm trying to download something right now and I'm not having much luck, which is unfortunate. I'm trying to download something from the coolest website I just found. It's called Liberty TV News. Liberty TV News. No, I'm sorry, libertynewstv.com. And, you know, if Kill Radio is an internet radio station, this is an internet television station. And I watched a couple of their videos this afternoon. And, I mean, it's funny, but, I mean, besides being funny, it's well done. I mean, their production value is, I was impressed. I mean, they're just really good, blatantly liberal, left-wing stories. And, tell you, it is a damn, let me see what happens if I press this button. I get absolutely nothing. Really interesting. And if I press this button, well, this is highly unfortunate because I was going to play this thing. Oh well, let's just go on to the news. Let's read some articles. What's going on in the news today? You're listening to the Kill Radio News, killradio.org. It's October 20th. Thursday. And we'll start out with something funny. It's funny because it's true. Tom DeLay booked in Houston on charges. Representative Tom DeLay turned himself in Thursday at the sheriff's office and was fingerprinted, photographed, and released on $10,000 bail on conspiracy and money laundering charges. By the way, this whole issue of conspiracy, it's really hard to prove. So you have to have a lot of evidence to bring about charges of conspiracy. They were able to convict Martha Stewart of conspiracy to defraud. Do you know how guilty you have to be to actually be convicted of conspiracy to defraud? Of course, now she's out of jail and on billboards, and it's really amazing how we celebrate our criminals. This article is from the Associated Press today. Accompanied by his attorney, Dick DeGaren, the former House Majority Leader, showed up about midday, appeared before a judge, and was gone in less than 30 minutes, Sheriff's Lieutenant John Martin said. Now, Ronnie Earle has the mugshot he wanted, DeGaren said, referring to the Travis County District Attorney who brought the charges. DeLay and his lawyer have accused the District Attorney of trying to make headlines for himself. Has anybody seen the mugshot, by the way? He's smiling in it. Smug prick. The Texas Republican is scheduled to make his first court appearance on Friday in Austin. The charges forced DeLay to give up his House leadership post. Good. He had been expected to turn himself in his home county, Fort Bend, outside of Houston, where a horde of reporters had been camped out waiting for him. But under Texas law, he could check in anywhere in the state. DeGaren said he and DeLay went to the sheriff's office in Houston because it was convenient. And because I wanted to avoid the circus. That's in quotes. Apparently the circus was in town. That's what Ronnie Earle wanted. He wanted a perp walk. We did not want to do it, the defense attorney said. DeLay and two political associates are charged in an alleged scheme to funnel corporate donations to candidates for the Texas legislature. State law prohibits donations of corporate money for direct campaign purposes. With DeLay's help, the GOP won control of the Texas House, and the legislature then pushed through a congressional redistricting plan that sent more Republicans to Washington, resulting in a war that's killed tens of thousands of people. Moving on. Man, I can't believe I can't play this file. I'm gonna click on it again, see if I get anything else. What a bummer. Myers back ban on most abortions from USAtoday.com. As a candidate for the Dallas City Council in 1989, Supreme Court nominee Harriet Myers said she would, quote, actively support, end quote, a constitutional amendment that would ban abortion except when it was needed to save a mother's life. Myers also said that if the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade, the 1973 ruling that didn't unlegalize abortion, she would back legislation in Texas to prohibit abortions, except in such emergencies. Myers, who also said she was willing to participate in anti-abortion rallies, expressed her views on a questionnaire given to council candidates by Texans United for Life, a group against abortion. The form was among thousands of papers on Myers that the White House sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee, which released them Tuesday. The papers accompanied a questionnaire that Myers filled out for the panel, which is likely to begin hearings on her nomination next month. It's unclear whether Myers' hard line against abortion has changed since 1989, when she was elected to the Dallas Council. However, the 16-year-old questionnaire offers the fullest look yet of how Myers, now White House counsel, has viewed the divisive issue. Abortion rights will be a focus of Myers' hearings because she would replace the retiring Sandra Day O'Connor, one of six justices on the 9-member court who have endorsed a woman's right to end a pregnancy. Myers, 60, has not said how she would rule in abortion-related disputes. Myers has not said much about anything. Myers. On the Senate questionnaire, she said she had made no promises as to how she would vote as a justice. But the 1989 document pleased some conservatives in the Senate who have been cautious about endorsing Myers because of her lack of a public record on baby killers. Senator Sam Brownback, crazy person from Kansas and a Judiciary Committee member who opposes abortion, called Myers' responses on the 1989 form, quote, comforting. She probably will say that doesn't tell you how she would vote on Roe v. Wade, but it does give me a little better indication. Then he started touching himself, and everybody in the room felt really awkward. Democrats said Meyer's 1989 views either were disconcerting or raised more questions than they answered. Senator Dianne Feinstein, baby killer and Democrat from California who backs abortion rights, said Meyer's responses are, quote, a deep concern that will be examined. Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat from New York, another supporter of abortion rights, said people are probably confused about what Harriet Meyers really feels. She has to make clear to the American people her judicial philosophy. Does anybody out there really know how Harriet Meyers feels? White House spokesman Scott McClellan stressed that Meyers' 1989 views were those of a politician, not a judge. He said she recognizes that personal views and ideology and religion have no role to play in the courts. And neither does she. Moving on. Now I'm obsessed with getting this media file to play. I see right here we have Windows Media Player. But, no such luck. It's a damn shame. You guys will be laughing at how funny this thing is. I'm going to return to the... You guys have got to check out libertynewstv.com. It is so cool. I decided I'm going to announce a new website every news show. And this is the one that I'm announcing today. Let's see what happens if I click on this thing here. Well, anyway, where was I? Associated Press. Again. Congress okays gun industry lawsuit shield. Great. Congress gave the gun lobby its top legislative priority Thursday, passing a bill protecting the firearms industry from massive crime victim lawsuits. Aw, poor gun lobby. President Bush said he will sign it. Our law should punish criminals who use guns to commit crimes, not law-abiding manufacturers of lawful products who make guns used in crimes. This thing on? The House voted 283 to 144 to send the bill to the president after supporters, led by the National Wacko Association, proclaimed it vital to protect the industry from being bankrupted by huge jury awards. Opponents, waging a tough battle against growing public support for the legislation, called it proof of the gun lobby's power over the Republican-controlled Congress. This legislation will make the unregulated gun industry the most pampered industry in America, said Kristen Rand, director of the Violence Policy Center. Under the measure, a half dozen pending lawsuits by local governments against the industry would be dismissed. Anti-gun groups say some lawsuits filed by individuals could be thrown out too. Anti-gun groups. The Senate passed the bill in July. The bill's passage was the NRA's top legislative priority and would give Bush and his Republican allies on Capitol Hill a rare victory at a time when some top GOP leaders are under indictment or investigation. I love it. I love it. It's great. Lawsuits seeking to hold the firearms industry responsible for the criminal and unlawful use of its products are brazen attempts to accomplish through litigation what has not been achieved by legislation and the democratic process, House Judiciary Committee Chairman James Sensenbrenner, Republican from Wisconsin, told his colleagues. Former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, and criminal, Republican from Texas, did not vote. He is in Texas in the moment in connection with his indictment in an alleged scheme to violate state election law. But, you know, I'm sure he'll be just fine. Propelled by GOP election gains and the incidents of lawlessness associated with the passing of Hurricane Katrina, support for the bill has grown since a similar measure passed the House last year and was killed in the Senate. Horrific images of people without the protection of public safety in New Orleans made a particular impression on viewers who had never before felt unsafe, according to the gun lobby. Americans saw a complete collapse of the government's ability to protect them, said Wayne LaPierre, the NRA's executive vice president. That burnt it. Those pictures of people standing there defending their lives and defending their property and their family were the one source of comfort was a firearm. I like teddy bears myself. With support from four new Republicans this session of Congress, the bill passed the Senate for the first time in July. House passage never was in doubt because it had 257 co-sponsors, far more than the 218 needed to pass. The bill's authors say it still would allow civil suits against individual parties who have been found guilty of criminal wrongdoings by the courts. Opponents say the strength of the bill's support is testament to the influence of the gun lobby. If the bill had been law, when the relatives of six victims of convicted Washington-area snipers John Allen Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo sued the gun dealer from which they obtained their rifle, the dealer would not have agreed to pay the families and victims $2.5 million. It is shameful that Republicans in Congress are pushing legislation that guarantees their gun-dealing cronies receive special treatment and are above the law. That's Representative Robert Wexler, Democrat from Florida. Bush has said he supports the bill, which would prohibit lawsuits against the firearms industry for damages resulting from the unlawful use of a firearm or ammunition. Gun makers and dealers still would be subject to product liability, negligence, or breach of contract suits, the bill's authors say. Democrats and Republicans alike court the NRA at election time. They like to take the NRA out for dinner. They like to share vanilla shakes at Johnny Rockets. But no kissing. No, not on the first date. And the bill has garnered bipartisan support. But the firearms industry still gave 88% of its campaign contributions, or $1.2 million, to Republicans in the 2004 election cycle. Gun control advocates, meanwhile, gave 98% of their contributions, or $93,700, to Democrats that cycle, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The bill is S.397. Go ahead. Look it up. I dare you. I dare you. Oh, dear. Oh, this is a good one. Afghans outraged over alleged desecration. Islamic clerics expressed outrage Thursday at television footage that purportedly shows U.S. soldiers burning the bodies of two dead Taliban fighters to taunt other militants and warned of a possible violent anti-American backlash. An anti-American backlash? In Afghanistan? What? That's crazy talk. President Hamid Karzai condemned the alleged desecration and ordered an inquiry. The operational commander of the U.S. military in Afghanistan, which launched its own criminal probe, said the alleged act, if true, was repugnant. Worried about the potential for anti-American feelings over the incident, the State Department said it instructed U.S. embassies around the globe to tell local governments that the reported abuse did not reflect American values. We kill people. Once they're dead, we don't fuck around with their bodies. That's from the State Department. Cremating bodies is banned under Islam, and one Muslim leader in Afghanistan compared the video to photographs of U.S. troops abusing prisoners at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison. Some of you might remember the naked man pyramids we were building there. Abu Ghraib ruined the reputation of the Americans in Iraq, and to me this is even worse, said Faiz Mohammed, a top cleric in the northern Kunduz province. Do you think Abu Ghraib really ruined the reputation of the Americans in Iraq? I'm not so sure about that. He goes on to say, "This is against Islam. Afghans will be shocked by this news. It is so humiliating. There will be very, very dangerous consequences from this." Anger was also evident in the streets. Quote, "If they continue to carry out such actions against us, our people will change their policy and react with the same policy against them." He then thought about how confusing that statement was and said, "Americans must die." Another man in the Capitol, Zahidullah, said the reported abuse was like atrocities committed by Soviet troops who were driven out of Afghanistan in 1989 after a decade of occupation. He warned that the same could happen to American forces. "Their future will be like the Russians," he said. The Russians. I don't recall anything really all that bad happening to the Russians in that situation. I don't know. In Washington, the U.S. government also condemned the alleged incident. The allegation was very serious and very troubling, State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said. His comment came after the department said U.S. embassies had been told to inform foreigners that abuse of remains is not reflective of our values. Well, that's good. I wonder what is reflective of our values over there. The move suggested U.S. worries about an anti-American uproar like Afghan riots in May that erupted after Newsweek said U.S. soldiers at the Guantanamo Bay detention facility desecrated Islam's holy book, the Quran. Newsweek later retracted the story, saying something like, sorry we made that up. I don't know how a book that big could have possibly been flushed down the toilet anyway. The alleged body burning comes as the U.S. military is struggling to bolster its image in Afghanistan amid charges by Karzai of heavy-handed tactics in fighting the Taliban. Karzai added, I love my job. I'm so happy I have this job. Thank you so much. This is the best job. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Americans. Thank you. Australia's SBS television network broadcast the video purportedly showing soldiers burning the bodies of two suspected Taliban fighters in hills outside Gonbaz village in the southern Shawalikot district, an area plagued by Taliban activity and considered by the local security forces as too dangerous to venture into unless accompanied by U.S. troops. I can't believe we're still dealing with the fucking Taliban. We're already in another war. Yeah. That's right, I'm the first to have thought of that. The network said the video was taken by a freelance journalist, Stephen DuPont. DuPont told the Associated Press that he was embedded with the Army's 173rd Airborne Brigade, said the burnings happened October 1st. He told SBS that soldiers in a U.S. Army psychological operations unit later broadcast taunting messages targeting the village, which is believed to be harboring Taliban fighters. They deliberately wanted to incite that much anger from the Taliban so the Taliban could attack them. That's the only way they can find them. The video did not show those messages being broadcast, although it showed some military vehicles fitted with speakers and playing loud music. According to a transcript released by SBS, the messages called the Taliban cowardly dogs. You are too scared to come down and retrieve their bodies, said one message, according to the transcript. DuPont told the AP the messages were broadcast in the local dialect, but were translated into English for him by members of the Army unit. He declined to provide further information. Other messages included, Hey, Taliban! Over here! Hey! The U.S. military said the Army Criminal Investigation Command was looking into the matter. Quote, this alleged action is repugnant to our common values, Major General Jason Kamiya said from the U.S. base at Bagram. This command takes all allegations of misconduct or inappropriate behavior seriously and has directed an investigation into the circumstances surrounding this allegation. A U.S. military spokeswoman, Sergeant Marina Evans, said investigators would check whether the purported act violated the Geneva Convention, which says the dead must be honorably interred, if possible, according to the rites of the religion to which they belonged. The Afghan Defense Ministry launched its own investigation, Karzai spokesman Karim Rahimi said. We strongly condemn any disrespect to human bodies, regardless of whether they are those of enemies or friends, he told the AP, adding, especially friends. This from the Common Dreams News Center, commondreams.org. That's a good place to get some news. There's an article called Rice, U.S. May Still Be in Iraq in 10 Years by Anne Guerin. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice declined on Wednesday to rule out American forces still being needed in Iraq a decade from now. Senators warn that the Bush administration must play it straight with the public or risk losing public support for the war. Do we have public support for the war currently? Pushed by senators from both parties to define the limits of U.S. involvement in Iraq and the Middle East, Rice also declined to rule out the use of military force in Iran or Syria or fucking Mars. We'll kill anybody. We're crazy. although she said the administration prefers diplomacy. I don't think the president ever takes any of his options off the table concerning anything to do with military force, Rice said. Yeah, no shit. Rice appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for only the second time since members gave her an unexpectedly tepid endorsement to replace Colin Powell in January, and she fielded pointed questions about U.S. intentions and commitment on Iraq from lawmakers who said they are hearing complaints at home. Complaints like, "What the fuck are we doing in Iraq?" Barbara Boxer said, "Our country is sick at heart at the spin and false expectations. They want the truth. And they deserve it. And like all the other Democrats, I'm going to complain about it and watch nothing happen." Rice said Iraq's police and army forces are becoming better able to handle the country's security without U.S. help. And she repeated President Bush's warning that setting a timetable for withdrawal plays into terrorist hands. Quote, "The terrorists want us to get discouraged and quit. They believe we do not have the will to see this through." Rice said the United States will follow a model that was successful in Afghanistan. You know, funny story. I just read this article about the Taliban, how we're still fighting them, and, oh well. Successful in Afghanistan. Starting next month, she said, joint diplomatic military groups called Provincial Reconstruction Teams will work alongside Iraqis as they train police, set up courts, and help local governments establish essential services. Like electricity and stuff. By State Department design, Rice testified before the committee just days after Iraq apparently approved its first constitution since a U.S.-led coalition ousted Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in 2003. Her appearance also coincided with the start of Saddam's trial in Baghdad for a 1982 massacre of 150 of his fellow Iraqis. Senator Richard Lugar, crazy person from Indiana, agreed with the Bush administration's "stay the course" approach, but said there are legitimate questions to ask about the future. Like, how do photons work? Quote, "We should recognize that most Americans are focused on an exit strategy in Iraq," said Lugar. Lugar, the Foreign Relations Committee chairman. "Even if withdrawal timelines are deemed unwise because they might provide a strategic advantage to the insurgency, the American people need to more fully understand the basis upon which our troops are likely to come home, since it's obvious the American people will never fully understand the basis upon which our troops were sent there in the first place." Okay, he didn't really say that. But everything else I've said today is just totally word for word. An AP Ipsos poll this month found 61% of respondents disapprove of Bush's handling of Iraq, while 32% said that they don't know how to read. In August, 53% said the United States made a mistake by going to war, while 43% said it was the right decision. War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. The figures represent a sharp drop-off from strong support for the war in the early going, tapering off into not so much support when we found out he actually meant it. The war also had overwhelming support in Congress, including from most of Rice's questioners Wednesday. "One thing the Vietnam generation learned is no foreign policy can be sustained without the informed consent of the American people. And the other thing is that we should avoid things like Vietnam. We haven't gotten that informed consent in terms of them knowing what they're signing on to from here on out," Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware. "So I'm not looking for a date to get out of Iraq, but if you're free for dinner. But at what point, assuming the strategy works, do you think we'll be able to see some sign of bringing some American forces home?" Rice did not address the Vietnam comparison and said the question of withdrawal is one for military planners. I love how she doesn't know anything when she doesn't want to answer a question. "I believe it was entitled Bin Laden Determined to Attack the United States with Airplanes on September 11th. Quote, "I really don't want to hazard what I think would be a guess, even if it were an assessment, of when that might be possible," Rice said of a troop withdrawal. Later, Senator Paul Sarbanes, Democrat from Maryland, told Rice that her response to the questions about U.S. troop withdrawal leaves open the possibility that U.S. forces could be in Iraq 5 or even 10 years down the road. Rice did not dispute that. I don't know how to speculate about what will happen 10 years from now, but I do believe that we're moving on a course on which Iraqi security forces are rather rapidly able to take care of their own security concerns. What a liar. Boxer read quotation after quotation from administration figures about Iraq, including Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld's February 2003 prediction that the war could last 6 days, 6 weeks, I doubt 6 months, to make the point that the war has not gone on as the administration predicted. Senator George Voinovich, crazy person from Ohio, read portions of a letter from a father who lost a son in Iraq. The letter called the war a misguided effort. "We have to really level with the American people," Voinovich told Rice. "This is not going to be over in 2 years. We're not going to just be able to walk out of Iraq and this is going to be over." But I'm not going to do anything about it because I'm a Republican. Here's another article from Common Dreams. What is this from? The Guardian, UK. "The Bush nemesis, U.S. right-wingers, still not satisfied with the president," by Sidney Blumenthal. "President Bush is the most conservative president in modern times. He consciously modeled himself as the opposite of his father. The conservative revolt contributed to defeat of the elder Bush, who was fiercely attacked as a betrayer. In a classic case of reaction formation, George W. Bush was determined never to make an enemy on the right. The younger Bush brought the neoconservatives, banished by Reagan and Bush Sr., back into government, followed their scenario for remaking the Middle East through an invasion of Iraq, using 9/11 as the pretext. He followed the right-wing script on supply-side economics, enacting an enormous tax cut for the wealthy that fostered a deficit that dwarfed Reagan's. The problem his father had tried to resolve through a tax increase, which earned the right's hostility. And Bush has followed the religious right's line on stem cell research, abortion, and, would you believe, creationism. For his vision of the world as black and white, his disdain for internationalism, his painting of the opposition as unpatriotic, his tax breaks for the upper bracket, and his religious zealotry, conservatives celebrated him. For his second term, Bush took his narrow victory as a mandate to govern from the hard right. At last, he would begin the privatization of Social Security, rolling back the New Deal. But he stumbled upon a dirty little secret of conservatism. The public supports conservative presidents so long as they leave alone the liberal programs that benefit them." This is a good article. "Baffled by the opposition, he plowed ahead." Baffled by pretty much everything, he plowed ahead. "Even as the Iraq War eroded his support. Then Hurricane Katrina blew the top off his administration's culture of cronyism. Meanwhile, the special prosecutor investigating the disclosure of a covert CIA operative's identity by senior administration officials has moved steadily towards his targets. Bush's nomination of his White House legal counsel and former personal lawyer Harriet Myers for the Supreme Court was the hair trigger for a conservative revolt. Myers is the least qualified nominee since Clarence Thomas. She appears on the White House website discussing how Bush plays horseshoes with his dog. The president throws the horseshoes to Barney, and Barney runs after them. In a meeting with the powerful chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Arlen Specter, who had said Myers needed a crash course in the law, she explained that she supported decisions that were the basis for Roe v. Wade, legalizing abortion. Then Myers took back her statement, reinforcing an image of incompetence and ignorance. Good times. Conservatives. Conservatives see her nomination as a rebuke to the cadres of ideologues groomed for Republican upward mobility. Right-wing pundits have outdone each other in denouncing her as a crony. Bush's former speechwriter David Frum has launched a petition drive to force Bush to withdraw her. "She once told me that the president was the most brilliant man she had ever met," he sneered. Well, there's proof enough she shouldn't be a judge. Yet Myers was nominated in place of professional ideologues because Bush has fallen from grace for his adherence to conservative policies. Bush calculated that the Senate would approve her, but not a right-wing judge with a well-delineated record. Had his conservative policies succeeded, he might have named a purebred ideologue. Having faithfully implemented conservative ideas, Bush is blamed by disloyal ideologues to deflect attention from the failure of their ideas, like Trotskyists, for whom communism remained an unfulfilled ideal. Conservatives claim that conservatism has not been tried, and Bush is an imposter. In attempting to avoid the nemesis of his father, Bush is reliving it. Bush. Time we got. Okay. What else do we have? Oh, this is a sad little article. FEMA official says boss ignored warnings. In the midst of the chaos that followed Hurricane Katrina, a federal emergency management agency official in New Orleans sent a dire email to Director Michael Brown saying victims had no food and were dying. No response came from Brown. Instead, less than 3 hours later, an aide to Brown sent an email saying her boss wanted to go on a television program that night after needing at least an hour to eat dinner at a Baton Rouge, Louisiana restaurant. Man, this is sad. The emails were made public Thursday at a Senate Homeland Security Committee hearing featuring Marty Bahamond, the first agency official to arrive in New Orleans in advance of the August 29th storm. The hurricane killed more than 1,200 people and forced hundreds of thousands to evacuate. Bahamond, who sent the email to Brown 2 days after the storm struck, said the correspondence illustrates the government's failure to grasp what was happening. There was a systematic failure at all levels of government to understand the magnitude of the situation. The leadership from top down in our agency is unprepared and out of touch. The 19 pages of internal FEMA emails show Bahamond gave regular updates to people in contact with Brown as early as August 28th, the day before Katrina made landfall. They appear to contradict Brown, who has said he was not fully aware of the conditions until days after the storm hit. Brown quit after being recalled from New Orleans amid criticism of his work. Wow. Talk about selective memory. Not fully aware of the conditions until days after the storm hit. Kind of like Condoleezza Rice wasn't fully aware of what the Bin Laden determined to attack United States memo was all about. Brown had sent Bahamond, FEMA's regional director in New England, to New Orleans to help coordinate the agency's response. He arrived on August 27th and was the only FEMA official at the scene until FEMA disaster teams arrived on August 30th. As Katrina's outer bands began drenching the city, August 28th, he sent an email to Deborah Wing, a FEMA response specialist. He wrote, quote, "Everyone is soaked. This is going to get ugly real fast." Subsequent emails told an increasingly desperate situation at the New Orleans Superdome, where tens of thousands of evacuees were staying. Bahamond spent 2 nights there with the evacuees. On August 31st, Bahamond emailed Brown to tell him that thousands of evacuees were gathering in the streets with no food or water, and that, quote, "estimates are many will die within hours," end quote. "Sir, I know that you know the situation is past critical," he wrote. "The sooner we can get the medical patients out, the sooner we can get them out." Get them out. Hello? 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 A short time later, Brown's press secretary, Sharon Worthy, wrote colleagues to complain that the FEMA director needed more time to eat dinner at a Baton Rouge restaurant that evening. "He needs much more than that 20 or 30 minutes. He's getting pie." This is actually what it says. It says, "He needs much more than that 20 or 30 minutes. Restaurants are getting busy. We now have traffic to encounter to go to and from a location of his choice, followed by wait service from the restaurant staff, eating, etc. Thank you." I mean, I can't funny that up. In an August 29th phone call to Brown informing him that the first levy had failed, Bahamond said he asked for guidance, but did not get a response. He just said thank you, and that he was going to call the White House, Bahamond said. Senators on the committee were dismayed. Quote, we will examine further why critical information provided by Mr. Bahamond was either discounted, misunderstood, or simply not acted on, said GOP Senator Susan Collins of Maine, who heads the committee. She decried the, quote, complete disconnect between senior officials and the reality of the situation, end quote. Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman, committee's top Democrat, said Bahamond's story is, quote,
ultimately infuriating and raises serious questions which our committee's investigation must answer.
Yeah. In emails, Bahamond described to his bosses a chaotic situation at the Superdome. Bahamond noted also that local officials were asking for toilet paper, a sign that supplies were lacking at the shelter. Quote, issues developing at the Superdome. The medical staff at the Dome say they will run out of oxygen in about 2 hours, and they're looking for alternative oxygen, Bahamond wrote Regional Director David Passy on August 28th. Bahamond said he was stunned that FEMA officials responded by continuing to send truckloads of evacuees to the Superdome for 2 more days, even though they knew supplies were in short supply. I found it amazing, he said. I believed at the time, and still do today, that I was confirming the worst-case scenario that everyone had always talked about regarding New Orleans. End quote. At a separate congressional hearing, lawmakers considering Louisiana's request for $32 billion for Gulf Coast rebuilding were told that Mississippi would need tens of billions of dollars of its own to restore its coastline. Gulf Coast lawmakers and state officials have been pushing for vast infusions of federal aid since Katrina hit. It will be in the billions, with a B level. It may be in the tens of billions. It won't be in the hundreds of billions. And I don't think there is 1,000 billions. William W. Walker, head of the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources, told a House Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee. But Representative John J. Duncan, Jr., the subcommittee chairman, earlier had said Congress cannot afford Louisiana's request. This is just not going to happen, said Duncan, Republican from Tennessee. I have a whole article here about how experts refute antibacterial soap claims. Apparently, it just kind of makes bacteria stronger. So, y'all can stop washing your hands so much. Put that aside for stupid article of the day. Oh, no, that one's even dumber. Oh, I have a lot of dumb articles to read. Here's a good article. Broadcaster says Pentagon pulled plug on show. Radio talk show host Ed Schultz says the Pentagon reneged after telling him his show would be aired for troops around the world. Pentagon spokesman says no decision has been made. Schultz said he had an agreement with the American Forces Radio and Television Service Network to air his show starting this week. He hosts a nationally syndicated show from Fargo that supporters have billed as a liberal alternative to Rush Limbaugh. Liberal alternative to Rush Limbaugh. What isn't a liberal alternative to Rush Limbaugh? Schultz said his producer got a call from Allison Barber, a deputy assistant secretary for defense, on Monday morning, saying the show was off for now. She was not sure it would be rescheduled. It's censorship, that's what it is, Schultz said. Schultz said he was critical of Barber on his show last week when he said she had coached a group of U.S. soldiers in Iraq on what to say before a teleconference with President Bush. Pentagon officials denied that, saying Barber was only preparing the soldiers for an interview with the president and, I guess, telling them exactly what to ask and when. I find it more than interesting that Allison Barber, who I gave a pretty strong critique to on Thursday and Friday, makes the call to pull the show, Schultz said. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman said, it's apparent to me that at least one staff member got ahead of where the decision process was. And that's unfortunate. Adding, but not for me. It would be an unfortunate misinterpretation to link any decision on whether to distribute Schultz's show to his criticism of Barber or other Bush administration officials, Whitman said. A group of Democratic senators sent a letter to Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld on Wednesday, asking for a definitive timeline for correcting what it said is a lack of political balance in talk radio programming on the American Forces Network. The Ed Schultz show would have been a, quote, first partial step toward achieving balance in political programming on AFN radio. Even that first step has been abruptly canceled, the letter said. The senators asked for a response by November 1st. Yeah, I'll let you know next week about that. We can't be sending actual news to our boys out there. I mean, it's bad enough they gotta be there. They shouldn't know that it's all a fucking lie. Well, that's the serious news. I'm really bummed I couldn't play that media file. I'll play it next week. It was good stuff. Everybody should go check out LibertyNewsTV.com. That is my site of the week. All right, now for news that doesn't matter at all. Australian study finds alcohol linked to croc attacks. And we're not talking about drunk crocodiles either. Almost one in three people bitten by deadly saltwater crocodiles in Australia had been drinking alcohol before the animal attacked, new research has found. An Australian review of unprovoked crocodile attacks on humans between 1971 and 2004 found that 29% of the 62 attacks had involved some alcohol consumption by the victim. About one-third of the people who had been attacked had actually been drinking alcohol. But it doesn't mean they were drunk when they fell into the river, although it did happen, said study co-author Charlie Manolis. Doesn't mean they were drunk when they fell in the river, but they did drink and then fall in a river full of crocodiles. Manolis said the research found that crocodiles were opportunistic predators, real assholes, and that when people took risks while in their habitat, they sometimes paid the ultimate price. Sometimes when people do drink, they throw caution to the wind, he said. Yeah. The study, published in the U.S.-based Wilderness Medical Society Journal, found that fatal attacks had remained roughly stable at about two per year since the 1970s. But the number of non-fatal attacks has increased markedly, Manolis said. Non-fatal attacks increased sharply from about 0.1 per year between 1971 and 1980 to 3.3 per year from 2001 to 2004, according to the study. The research found that most attacks, 81%, occurred while the victim was swimming or wading, and that all fatal attacks involved water, since crocodiles very rarely can operate elevators to get to the 10th floor of office buildings. Manolis said the dramatic increase in the saltwater crocodile population since the species was protected in the early 1970s was not necessarily responsible for the increase in attacks. The number of wild salties, as they call them, estimated to live in the Northern Territory, has jumped from as few as 3,000 in 1971 to more than 75,000 currently. But he said because the average size of crocodiles had increased over that time, the animals attacking humans had often changed from a small hatchling to a 4-meter giant weighing hundreds of kilograms. Last month, a man was killed by a 5-meter crocodile while diving near Darwin. The diving in a place called Darwin, and you get eaten by a crocodile. I mean, how can you hear that and not believe in God? That was 5 days after a British snorkeler was taken and killed by a croc. But Manolis does not think culling is the answer. It's people being sensible, he said. So for the listeners out there, really important, don't drink and go swimming in crocodile-infested waters. See, if you didn't listen to Kill Radio, you wouldn't know these things. Next in news that doesn't matter, this is from Reuters. Astrologer wrong on the big prediction. Hundreds of people flocked to a village in central India Thursday to see if an astrologer who forecast his own death would indeed die as predicted. The 75-year-old man survived the day. Kunjilal Malviya, who lives south of the Madhya Pradesh state capital Gopal had been meditating in his house after announcing he would die Thursday between 3 and 5 p.m. Okay. A police official confirmed the astrologer was fine and quoted his family members as saying the prediction failed because many of those gathered had prayed for him to live. Quote, "We are afraid of his prediction coming true because all his predictions till date have been correct," his son Anirudh said by phone earlier Thursday. "My father had predicted the death of my grandmother 15 years ago, and it came true exactly like he calculated. He said, in a little bit, I'm going to kill your grandfather." Police have been posted near the house to prevent the astrologer from killing himself, authorities said. Millions of Indians consult astrologers about their futures as well as marriage and job prospects. Malviya's prediction is not the first of its type by an Indian astrologer. They're always predicting they're going to die. But in the past, crowds have beaten up astrologers when their predicted demise failed to occur. So obviously they should start predicting that they will get beaten up. Last and especially least, Michael Jackson summoned for jury duty. Authorities want Michael Jackson back in court, this time as a juror. Jackson received a jury summons at his Neverland Valley Ranch 4 months after he was acquitted of child molestation charges. "Just one of those ironies of life that he'd be called as a juror," said Laurie Levinson, a professor at Loyola School of Law who monitored Jackson's trial. "It's unlikely that Jackson will show up for jury selection. His lawyers have filed paperwork for a deferment based on the fact that he now lives in Bahrain, where I understand the little boys are just superb. He is permanently living outside of the United States," Thomas Mesereau, who defended Jackson against the child molestation charges, said Wednesday. Jury Commissioner Gary Blair said Jackson likely will be excused from serving. "All he has to do is show he has legal residency somewhere else and he'll be exempted. I'm not really sure why you guys are interviewing me. You don't really have an article to write. Hello? Blair said he summoned Ronald Reagan when he was president but granted him a deferment until he was out of office. Actress Bo Derek, also a local resident, received at least 2 jury summonses and served on 1 panel without incident. And that's the news. That is the news. Do I have any more news? Oh, this is mildly entertaining. Found this list of military service history of prominent U.S. politicians and pundits. I can't really say that I know all these names, but I'm sure you are smarter than I. Than me? See, I fucked that up. Okay, Democrats. Dick Gephardt, Air National Guard, 1965-1971. Tom Daschle, First Lieutenant, Air Force, 1969-72. Al Gore, listed 1969 in August, sent to Vietnam January 1971 as an Army journalist in 20th Engineer Brigade. Bob Kerry, Lieutenant, Navy, 1966-69, Medal of Honor. John Kerry, Lieutenant, Navy, 66-70, Silver Star, Bronze Star, Purple Hearts. Charles Rangel, Staff Sergeant, 1948-52, Bronze Star, Korea. Max Cleland, Captain, Army, 65-68. Ted Kennedy, Army, 51-53. Tom Harkin, Navy, 62-67. Naval Reserve, 68-74. Jack Reed, Army Ranger, 71-79. Army Reserve, 79-91. Fritz Hollings, World War II, Army Officer, Bronze Star, 7 campaign ribbons. Leonard Boswell, Army, 56-76. Pete Peterson, Air Force Captain, POW, Purple Heart, Silver Star, Legion of Merit. Mike Thompson, Staff Sergeant, 173rd Airborne, Purple Heart. Bill McBride, Florida candidate for governor. Vietnam Marines, Bronze Star. Gray Davis, Army Captain, Vietnam, Bronze Star. Pete Stark, Air Force, 55-57. Chuck Robb, Vietnam. Hal Heflin, Silver Star. George McGovern, Silver Star, in DFC during World War II. Bill Clinton, did not serve. Student deferments. Entered draft, but received a number 311. Jimmy Carter, 7 years in the Navy. Walter Mondale, Army, 51 to 53. John Glenn, World War II, Korea, 60 FCs. Air Medal with 13 clusters. Tom Lantos, served in Hungarian Underground, World War II. Saved by Raoul Wallenberg. And now for the Republicans. Dick Cheney, did not serve. Several deferments, last by marriage. Dennis Hastert, did not serve. Tom DeLay, did not serve. Roy Blunt, did not serve. Bill Frist, Mitch McConnell, Rick Santorum, Trent Lott, did not serve, did not serve, did not serve, did not serve. John Ashcroft, did not serve. Although he did get 7 deferments to teach business. Jeb Bush, did not serve. Karl Rove, did not serve. Saxby Chambliss, did not serve. Bad knee. That's Saxby Chambliss, notorious for having attacked Max Cleland's patriotism. Paul Wolfowitz, Ben Weber, Richard Pearl, Douglas Faith, Elliot Abrams, Richard Selby, John Kill, Tim Hutchinson, Christopher Cox, Newt Gingrich, none of them served. Don Rumsfeld served in the Navy from 1954 to 1957 as a flight instructor. George W. Bush failed to complete his 6-year National Guard, got assigned to Alabama so he could campaign for family friend running for U.S. Senate, failed to show up for required medical exam, disappeared from duty. By the way, a lot of people don't know this. He's the president. Phil Graham did not serve. John McCain, Silver Star, Bronze Star, Legion of Merit, Purple Heart, Distinguished Flying Cross. Dana Rohrabacher did not serve. John M. McHugh did not serve. J.C. Watts did not serve. Jack Kemp did not serve. Had a bad knee, although he continued in the NFL for 8 years. Dan Quayle, Journalism Unit of the Indiana National Guard. Rudy Giuliani did not serve. George Pataki did not serve. Spencer Abraham, John Engler did not serve. Lindsey Graham was a National Guard lawyer. Arnold Schwarzenegger went AWOL from an Austrian army base. Ronald Reagan didn't serve because of poor eyesight, so he served in the non-combat role of making movies. And then there's a list here also of pundits and preachers, which is kind of cool. Because these guys love talking about how we need to go to war and all that. Sean Hannity. Man, I hate that guy. Did not serve. Rush Limbaugh did not serve. Bill O'Reilly. Michael Savage. George Will. Chris Matthews. Paul Gigot. Bill Bennett. Pat Buchanan. Bill Kristol. Kenneth Starr. Antonin Scalia. Clarence Thomas. Ralph Reed. Michael Medved. Charlie Daniels. None of whom served. This has been the Kill Radio News. It's Thursday, October 20th, 2005. You now know everything there is to know for today. Tomorrow there will be more news, but I'm not going to be the one to read it to you. You're going to have to wait till next week. That's it. Go away. Oh, I suppose you want to hear something now, huh? All right, let's see what we got. Let me put something on for you.